Well, over the Tasman now to New Zealand and Rocket Lab. Yes, they had a launch last Thursday, and they launched at 2:20 Australian Eastern Standard Time. That was 4:20 in the afternoon in New Zealand. And 3 minutes later, the rocket entered space. And, well, Rocket Lab said at the time, yay, success, we're in space. And, you know, we all clapped and cheered and thought, ah, that meant they're in orbit. But no, later on we found out that they had only gone into, yes, they'd gone into space, but they hadn't reached orbital velocity, and the thing crashed down into the South Pacific Ocean. So a message from Rocket Lab said, great first stage burn, stage separation, second stage ignition, and fairing separation. Didn't quite reach orbit. As I said, the first message from Rocket Lab soon after the launch said, quote, made it to space. Team delighted. More to follow. And as we heard, that more to follow was that they hadn't in fact got into orbit. Now, Rocket Lab collected 25,000 data channels during the flight. Their engineers in Los Angeles and Auckland are analyzing this data to find out how the rocket performed and to optimize the vehicle on future missions. Two more test flights are scheduled for this year. Now, Rocket Lab told The Space Show that it is hoped that the first commercial flight will be later this year. The second rocket is already in the factory. At full production, Rocket Lab says it expects to launch more than 50 times a year. Afterwards, Peter Beck said, and we quote, we're really happy with what we achieved. For a test flight, we got a lot further than certainly we expected, and we captured all the major events through the flight. Well, we have this profile on Rocket Lab and the ethos, the origins of the Rocket Lab, and a little bit about Peter Beck's background. Peter Beck is the Chief Executive Officer of Rocket Lab.
My name's Peter Beck, and I build, design, build and launch rockets into space. People in New Zealand often forget that we're a small country in the middle of nowhere, and we've got an awful lot of satellite dishes pointing up to the sky, and we're completely reliant on space infrastructure. Whether it be a telephone call to the United States or even just jumping on the internet, it's space infrastructure that enables all that to happen. I'll just briefly tell you a little bit about Rocket Lab and the whole point to Rocket Lab. So Rocket Lab is a small private company. We're actually the only private company in the Southern Hemisphere running a space launch program. And our laboratories are based within industrial research, and it's we're a completely private company, but we do enjoy sharing industrial research's laboratory facilities. And that's one of the other key differences with Rocket Lab is we're all about public access to space. So everyone in this room, if they wish, can go onto our website or give us a call and say, we want to send something into space, and as long as it's dead or not a mother-in-law, we're more than happy to send it into space. And that's a really exciting thing about the commercial space industry. The space is no longer governed by a whole lot of large governments and huge bureaucracy, and it really is the place for the privateer at the moment. And that's what Rocket Lab is definitely all about. Now, just quickly, how did we end up at Rocket Lab? You don't sort of wake up one morning and say, right, I'm going to build a rocket and go to space. Rocket Lab is essentially built on 13 years of my own private research. So, if you will, I'll just jump you back 13 years ago, and I was currently at that time working for Fisher & Paykel down in Dunedin as an apprentice tool and die maker. And I decided one day, it was really the engineering challenge that first attracted me to building rockets, and also the dissatisfaction with internal combustion engines. There had to be a better way to produce power. So I did a whole lot of initial research, and that's one of the key fundamental things also that ethos is carried through to Rocket Lab today, and that's do a whole lot of research, understand the physics and the engineering, and then go and do something instead of just shooting from the hip. And that's the reason why I've got all my fingers and a full head of hair and not all charcoaled up, is because you can understand all the physics behind it before you start. So that's essentially what I did, and I decided to build a small hydrogen peroxide monopropellant thruster. And Fisher and Paykel at the time were incredibly supportive of my research and my activities. And many a time I'd go into the storeroom and say, "Hey Trev, I need a bit of titanium for my combustion chamber. Can you give us a quote from an engineering company and try and find some for me?" And these pieces of titanium would just end up on my bench the next day or the next week, and I never received a quote for a piece of material yet. And they were just labelled job number apprentice project. And that was really fantastic support that Fisher and Paykel used to give me. And it paid off for them as well, because whether it's as the years went by and the rockets got more complicated, and I used more and more Fisher and Paykel's equipment and tools and analysis and everything like that, it paid off for them as well, because whether it's an injector for a rocket engine or an injector for an air brake for a dishwasher, it's the same thing. The physics are the same. So it was a complete waste of time. It was a good investment for Fisher and Paykel in the end. But anyway, after I built the small engine, it was time to make the fuel. Unfortunately, you can't just call up the phone and buy 90% proof hydrogen peroxide. The best you can do in New Zealand is 50% proof, and the rest of the percentage is all full of stabilisers that make it stable, which you don't want for rocket propulsion, and water and all sorts of other things. So even Fisher and Paykel drew the line at me commissioning a bubble reactor column and a pilot plant for manufacturing rocket fuel, so I had to take that one home. And unfortunately, I didn't have a workshop at home, but I did have a spare bedroom. So within that spare bedroom, I set up a small bubble reactor column pilot plant and started to produce my own hydrogen peroxide, and did so very successfully. And then once I achieved that goal, the next time was to scale up. Next thing to do was to scale up and make enough for rocket propulsion to actually make an engine and fire it as a test bed. So I moved my stuff outside essentially and bought a garden shed, and really researched it thoroughly and did the best I could with the resources I had. Just little things like tying the shed down with wire ropes instead of bolting it to the ground, in case you have a massive explosion. You don't end up with your shed a couple of blocks away, you just end up a mess shed, you know, all on wire ropes. All those little things that are actually important. So I built this pilot plant in the hydrogen peroxide shed. And when I think back these days, it would just put a P-Lab to shame. It really would. There was oilless compressors running 24/7 and vents squirting and lights going all the time as I was producing this hydrogen peroxide. But anyway, cut a long story short, produced this hydrogen peroxide, and the research for the engine was very successful, and I did some novel research in liquid catalyst beds for the hydrogen peroxide, which is a little bit unusual. But anyway, I drew the line eventually at the hydrogen peroxide, because really I didn't have the facilities to undertake the research in a safe manner. And that's an important thing as well when you're mucking around with rockets. It's knowing when to pull the pin and knowing when to bail out, because you don't really get a second chance. And so anyway, what really crystallised for me was not having the safety equipment. And my chemical suit consisted of a whole lot of rubbish bags duct taped together, welding helmet, and lovely pink Madge dishwashing gloves for safety equipment. And it was in fact the pink Madge gloves that really let me down, because I got a small leak in it and got a little bit of hydrogen peroxide on my finger, and it's very, very oxidising and a wee chemical burn. And not a serious thing at all, but enough to give me a fright. And in fact, ran inside and into the sink and run cold water over this little burn. But the issue is, I still had a beaker of hydrogen peroxide in my other hand. And in my panic, I just tipped it down the sink and I don't want to mess with this stuff anymore. Tipped it down the sink and carried on. I recommend to everybody here, if you have a beaker of 90% hydrogen peroxide in your hand, do not put it down your sink, because it causes some significant issues. And maybe there's a polymer chemist here who can tell me why, but it managed to melt every single PVC joint from my sink right down to the main pipe underneath the house.